A lot of concern has been expressed recently about students who pass through school without learning to read. But what about those children who have learned to read? Are they reading? And if so, what? Where are they getting their books? At the library, at school, or at the supermarket? And how can we encourage children to make the most of this invaluable skill once they have grasped it? Welcome to Frankly Speaking. I'm Helen Ackerman at George Mason University. With us to discuss the changing nature of children's books and what encourages a child to read is Mary Montebello, Professor of Education at George Mason University. Mary, there seems to be an immense number of children's books on the market today. Do children have a wider choice than ever before?
Absolutely. We have the books that deal with all facets of real-life problems, real-life experiences, all of the issues that we as adults are dealing with. In fact, there's not a topic that's written for adults that's not written for children today.
That's amazing. Why do children read?
They read for the very same reasons that we do as adults. They read because it tells a good story, because the story moves, there's a great deal of action. The message is clear, the characters are believable, the plot is credible and plausible. They read because they like it, pure unadulterated enjoyment. They read because it holds their interest. They read because there's conflict in it, and really conflict is very center to our lives. They read because it allows them to vent emotions, fear, laughter, tears, love, hate, jealousy, contempt, courage, indignation, confusion.
So basically they read for entertainment.
Entertainment, but also to help them deal with pressures, life pressures. They read because it helps them to see other solutions to a particular problem. They read because they see the universality of the problem. Oh, I thought it was happening only to me. He's dealing with it also.
I have noticed that if you look at the best of these books, those by Judy Blume, for example, they seem to differ a great deal from what children were reading about 20 years ago. Things like The Bobbsey Twins or Nancy Drew. They do seem to really emphasize realism.
You see, the central purpose of literature that needs to be discharged is that it does help youngsters as well as adults deal with life's problems, help us understand ourselves better, help us understand others, and help us deal with the many conflicts in life. And it all leads to better living, better interaction with one another, understanding one another, wanting to do something for someone else. So that in the sense that literature reflects life and life reflects literature, yes, indeed, there is more realism in today's books, but then today's society is more complicated than it might have been, say, 50 years ago.
So you think it's really a response to a need that children today have that children in the past did not have?
Yes, and I think as adults, be it the parent, the teacher, or the librarian, we have that responsibility to surround them with these books. And then whenever that child or the teenager feels a need for the book, he will reach out for it.
They really deal with some heavy subjects, sex, divorce, drugs, single parenting. You don't think that that might create a higher anxiety level for some children?
It depends on what happens when the book is read. If the child feels comfortable and senses a feeling of rapport with the adult, be it the teacher, the parent, or a combination, that the child can raise questions and talk about it if there are questions, then it will be most helpful. But if the child feels there is not the freedom to discuss this with the adult without being censored, then something else might happen. But they go to the books for the same reasons that we do as adults, for solutions, for options, for alternatives, for running away from, in the nicest sense of the word, and for dealing with the conflicts. And we really want them to have all of these books available to them. Let's just take the whole idea of mainstreaming in the schools now. We don't want children to be introduced to the books dealing with handicaps solely when a handicapped child comes to that classroom. As decent human beings concerned with all human beings, we want to be aware of the problems and the anxieties and all the abilities of the handicaps handicapped people even before the youngster comes to the classroom. You see, when you talk to handicapped people, they say, the problem is not my handicap. The problem is the way people interact with me or the way they don't interact with me. And so they can have the vicarious experience through the books dealing with just the handicap.
Books from earlier decades often had children in control of the action. The Hardy Boys is a classic example of that. I get the feeling in the books I see these days that they are certainly more realistic in that they put the child in the position of being at the mercy of its parents' decisions or whatever the situation is in the particular book. Is that kind of lack of realism still desirable? Or
it's still desirable, and it's still there. There are still all of the genres that we were exposed to as children. The fairy tales, the modern fantasy, you see. The humorous, the ridiculous, the exaggerated situations. They do have the protagonists in control. Pippi Longstocking and all the string of series that are about Pippi. But then we do have the realism as well. And it would seem to me that it's important for all adults to be aware that we do have all of the genres. It's not solely the hard, realistic fiction, but that we do want to have this sense of drawing upon the realism as well as the light and fanciful. We as adults need the light and fanciful. We don't read just one type of literature, and that's the way it needs to be with the young as well.
If you noticed with your child that they were sticking to the fanciful, to the unrealistic, should you be concerned? Should you try and introduce them to other literature? Or are they looking for something that they need and they should just be getting what they need?
I think the answer to that would depend on what you as the parent are observing over a long period of time. You know, if something is happening just in a period of a week or two or even a month, I would hold off before I come down in any way, shape, or form. And even when I do come down, it would be very gently. But if you find that it is answering his need or her need, certainly you're going to hold back. Eventually, though, overall, you want that child to be exposed to all of the genres. And if the rapport and trust is such between the parent and the child, where he or she has had this great freedom, when it comes to the point where you want to say, all right, now you've been going gung-ho in that, and that's fine with me, but I would like for you to try this biography for me, then there might be more receptiveness to that than there might be otherwise. And overall, if indeed you're also reading to that child, and he sees you reading, then the power of your suggestion will be even greater.
Okay, so where does the parent start to look for good books for their child?
All right, first of all, your library. The library dispenses just fantastic reading lists, and sometimes the lists are related to themes, sometimes they're related to age ranges, sometimes they're related to holidays or a very hot topic of the moment, but these are continually available at the library for free, and if you don't see them on the desk, ask for them. Make sure the young one is with you at the library, seeing you ask, so that this becomes a habit for him as well. The librarian will have lists of the award winners, the Caldecotts, the Newberries. Take those. The newspapers will carry reviews of children's books. The newspapers will carry articles by authors discussing their books and the books of others. And there are some fantastic paperbacks available for parents that are, many of them are free. All one needs to do is to send a stamped, self-addressed envelope, as well as paperbacks that might be $3 or $4, but are loaded with maybe 500 annotations, themes, and categorized ages and stages that one can use over a period of years. Lots of availabilities. A visit to a bookstore like Cheshire Cat or Barcroft Books would have many of these paperbacks available.
You have found the desirable literature. You have presented it to your child. The child displays no interest whatsoever. What then?
I'm hoping that we're not talking about the 15-year-old or a 10-year-old, because we want to get them very, very young, just as the TV people do in terms of advertisements. Number one, you must read to the child. All ages, Absolutely. When you listen to some of the anecdotes of the Pulitzer Prize winners, as well as the Newbery winners in terms of children's books, repeatedly they say that as young ones, they were read to. And this was a scheduled, precious time in that family, not just once in a while. We happen to have 5 minutes, but it's an ongoing part of the family life. Read to them at all ages. Tell them stories at all ages. Again, thinking of John Gardner, he often would talk about how the parents would tell stories to one another while they were doing dishes, you see, and this was a model for the youngsters. The parents would tell stories to one another at Grange meetings, and you want to do the same with the child. The language, the lilt, the rhythm, the syntax of the language must get in their ears, and that's the way to do it. Have the youngster then reading to you as well. Make sure there's a special place in that home for the child to go and read to himself. And this, it doesn't have to be a large den, a large room. It could be just one very tiny spot, sometimes maybe even in a closet that's set up specially for him. But he knows he can get away from you and everyone else and do his own reading. Poetry needs to come into this also when we talk about getting them hooked on books. In the selection of the books, make sure that what we're selecting moves quickly, is appropriate for the age, appropriate for the interest, so that it grabs them and they want to stay with it.
I have noticed that sometimes children that I have come across seem to lose interest somewhat in reading once they go to school, particularly when they get a lot of afternoon activities, after school activities, and they have friends they want to play with, and suddenly reading doesn't look nearly as desirable. How can you handle that kind of problem?
Well, I think this is an example where the school personnel and the parents need to work very closely together on this. The parent needs to say, you know, I'm concerned about this. And if the parent notices that in this particular school, for example, there isn't a place for literature, there is not reading aloud, there is not storytelling, then you need to ask about that. But there are schools with fantastic administrators, for example, Miss Mahoney here at Greenacres School, where in looking at her teacher's lesson plans, they need to show her where they are providing time for literature in their lesson plans. They need to show her where they are reading to children, where they are telling stories to them. And there is a time in that building when absolutely everyone in the building is reading, the principal, the secretary, the custodian, the nurse, and the children. So you have a statement going there. Now, the beauty of this is that research repeatedly shows that if they are read to, if stories are told to them, they are the readers later on. But this must go on all of the time, so that when you meet an adult who says, well, I believe in it, but I don't have time for it, and he doesn't have time for it, then I think we need to remind them about what research says. You want him to read, I want him to read. This is what research says.
Well, it sounds to me what you're saying, Mary, is first find the good books, and then provide a very strong model for your children and keep on reading to them.
You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University, production coordinator Pat Ping. For information about our guest or this program, please call 323-2138. That's 323-2138. I'm Helen Ackerman at George Mason University, the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening. Thank you.